of October in the year 2000. This is an introductory lecture on Dianetics and Scientology, what Ingrams, Locks, and Secondaries are, what affinity, reality, and communication, the various scales are, how you audit things, some of the states possible, and is intended for new people to understand Scientology, this applied religious philosophy. It is a religious philosophy. Discussion of that. Word religious, some people think that it means some kind of a religious practice, such as Christianism or something like that. Religious means basically we fix it. Re and legos, read, put back together, legos, we fix it. The reason I know that is because I used to have a wagon wheel repair shop in Rome, and that was a sign I had above it. It was re legos, we fix it, busted wheels. So Scientology basically is an applied religious philosophy. Now, philosophy is some way of looking at life, some way of making sense of the confusion that we find ourselves as we look out over life. It's basically a set of ideas or beliefs that whenever you follow these rules that you've set up, you could say that your life is in honor, or that you are keeping true to your own goals and purposes. Now, applied means that we can take this data, this philosophy, and we can immediately apply it to the real world and see some sort of changes in it. Either good or bad, applied just means applied. Now, Scientology is an applied religious philosophy. Now, what this means is that it is a way of looking at something in the way of a religion that we can apply to the universe around us, and it's a way of thinking. The base of the word religos, or religion, is of interest here. Basically, this means having to do with a spirit. Religos. In Scientology, whenever we follow this applied philosophy, will result in improved abilities of the spirit. The mind and the body are almost incidental, because the spirit alone can save or heal the body. That is one workable definition of Scientology. Scientology itself comes from a couple words, skio and logo. Basically, skio means science or studying or knowledge or knowing, and logo means to understand or learn data. So we have skio to logo, which means knowing how to know. Technically, it means knowing how to know answers in the very fullest sense of the word. Now, Scientology is a tool. It's a screwdriver. It's a pair of pliers. It's a hacksaw. It doesn't do anything until you do something with it. It just lays there. Now, if we apply Scientology to life, then we're going to get some changes. And these changes inevitably are for the better in the estimation of the person that these techniques are applied to, and also observably and around in their one's friends and in the universe of others. But basically, Scientology means knowing how to know answers. By using some of the techniques of Scientology, you can take an area that was previously a mystery and find out a great many things about this area. In fact, by applying solid Scientology to any field of life, you're going to achieve a greater understanding of it. Now, Dianetics is a little bit different. Dianetics was the original sequence of events in the development of Dianetics and Scientology. The first book was produced in 1950, written by Eller H., and it was called Dianetics, the Modern Science of Mental Health. Now, basically, Dianetics supposes that we have an unconscious mind, which is called a reactive mind. We also call it a bank, you know, like a bank of numbers or something. And this is an unknown and unknowing reactive mind. Dianetics is a very, very complete treatise on the subject. LRH went into a great many areas in discovering Dianetics that later were further expanded upon and became known as Scientology. Now, Dianetics, the end phenomena of Dianetics, or the end product of Dianetics, is a well and happy human being. Now, that's a guy that's living in the meat body, and he's pretty much going to die at the end of his life. But he's well, and he doesn't have any aches or any pains, and he's pretty much happy, and he's a human being. In other words, probably a very high state as compared to the world around us, but as compared to the state of an immortal being, being pinned in a meat body here on Earth, subject to a 70 or 80 year lifetime, is not exactly the best of state. But nonetheless, clear is very far and above anything that man has ever achieved before in the past, predictably, reliably, and with certain results. In the past, there were many philosophers that spoke about what the capabilities of man were. Several people have noticed this reactive mind. One of the first people was in a German philosopher, Sigmund Freud. He said that we had a subconscious mind and we didn't know about it. Some other people have made work. Pavlov, for example, found that you could ring a bell and feed the dog, and pretty soon he would start salivating, waiting for the food, and pretty soon you could ring the bell in his mouth and water, and you didn't have to do anything about it. Well, this is a good example of a reactive mind. Now, this reactive mind has influence over our goals, over our purposes, over our physical body, over our emotional well-being, our states of well-being. In general, it impinges upon the being and the mind without any consent or control of the being themselves. Now, this may seem a little hard to believe, but it's very true. And the first time you run an Ingram, this will be as plain as a nose on your face. Now, this reactive mind is composed of three basic things. The first one we call an engram or ingram. It's spelled E-N-G-R-A-M. This comes from a biology term. It means a lasting trace on a cell. At the time, LRH modified this word to make a special word that means that the person had undergone an incident of pain and unconsciousness. An Ingram is an incident of pain and unconsciousness. It has all the perceptics in it. We have normally taught that there's 8 perceptions, sight, smell, touch, taste, so forth, but there's really about 52. You know which way north is, you know what time of day it is, you know whether it's hot or cold, and the saline content of your body, and whether people are moving around you. In short, you have about 52 different perceptions. These are all recorded faithfully. Now, they're recorded faithfully where? That's a good question. To a large degree, this is what's wrong with the being in the first place. He has perfect memory, or perfect recording of it anyway. His memory may not be too good, but he has perfect recording. The only trouble is that this data is filed away in places where he's not sure it's at, and sometimes he can't even find it. If we look where one of the places this might be stored, we're going to find something that we're going to call the time track. Now, this is a consecutive record of now, from the very far past, the beginning of the time, extending through present time and on through into potential future. It's a consecutive record of a being's entire record of existence, or knowledge of existence. Now, these things are taken about 32 frames a second, something like that. They're very detailed. They have 52 perceptions in them. Decisions of other people, your own decisions, a great many things are in this time track, this record of existence. Now, this would all be fine and good, except some of this stuff gets buried, and it gets buried by Ingram. Now, an Ingram is, by definition, a moment of pain and unconsciousness. Now, let's say a guy gets hit in the head in a baseball bat. He's playing a baseball game, and they throw the bat, and it whacks somebody, poor little girl, on the head and knocks her out. And she wakes up and she don't remember anything. Only thing she remembers is she was bending over to eat her popcorn, and the next thing I knew, she was looking up at the teacher standing above her, and they're saying, get back, stay here, are you all right? Well, this technically is an Ingram. The person was unconscious. They have physical pain. They have a a fast shock or a sudden change. Somebody could get hit real hard, or they could be, you know, froze, or they could be boiled, or anything that would happen to them with a randomly level, something that they could not predict, was too great for them to understand or feel or communicate with, and they go unconscious. If a person was to hit you in the head with a bat very, very slowly, you'd be able to confront the whole thing, and it probably wouldn't even stun you. But if they do it all in a tenth of a second, whack, you're going to go a knot on your head, and you go unconscious. Now, that's what an engram is. It's a moment of pain and unconsciousness. Now, pain is very important here, as well as unconsciousness. Both of these items are present in the engram. There are some other definitions. A full study of Dianetics will give you the skinny on all of this. Now, the next state we're going to take up is called a secondary. All right, so we're going to say that engram is the primary thing, and it has to be there before you can get a secondary on that particular subject. Now, a secondary is not physical pain and unconsciousness, but rather an emotional pain. You just find out that your grandma died, or your dad died, or your best dog died, or got run over by a car, or something like this. You're awake, you're perfectly aware, but all of a sudden there's this huge emotional shock that happens, and it's usually loss, and there's a tremendous amount of grief in this thing. Grief is always loss. Anytime you see somebody that's walking around sad, you know they've lost a lot of things in their life. In fact, one of the easiest ways to patch somebody up is just to ask them, who's gone, or what's lost, or what's not there anymore. And all of a sudden they'll start telling you all the things that aren't there, and first thing you know, they'll be feeling a whole lot better. Because what you've actually had them do was look at this this emotional loss, and every time that you look at it a little bit, you erase a little bit of this out of this reactive mind, and it gets filed back in the analytical mind, or properly according to the time track. So that basically what a secondary is. It's an emotional loss. It's an emotional impact. It's a sudden change that affected emotionally. It's a loss. Death of a loved one, an ally, a pet, all of these things are actually secondary. Now, the third thing that we'll discuss is called a lock. Now, normally we think of a lock as something you hook on a hasp and you turn it with a key and it locks up something. Well, in a sense, that's what this does. A lock is something that has similar content. For example, you see a picture of a baseball bat, and that was in our original engram of a baseball bat hitting somebody on the head. Now, lock just kind of sticks on top of this whole thing and takes a little bit of attention units away. So those are the three basic terms. You have an engram, which is a moment of actual real physical pain and unconsciousness. You have a secondary, which is somewhat similar in content, and it has emotional impact and unconsciousness. And then you have a lock, which is given to a person whenever perhaps they're feeling a little bit tired and they're not just feeling too good on top of everything, and they get in a similar situation that starts to remind them of these old incidents. Now, the reactive mind was actually a pretty good thing whenever it was first invented. We're going to take you back on the time track a little bit. Before there were words, or even before there were people or anything else, we'll just go back to a little fish. Now, I think Ron uses this example several times, or somewhere in the technology, there's lots of these examples. Now, we're just going to have a little fish, and he's just going along, minding his own business, and he likes to eat shrimp, you see. So, one day, he swims off to a new part of the lake, and he gets across this little place, and it's got some yellow sand on it. Well, he doesn't think much of this, because, man, he's finding all kinds of these little shrimp, and they're pretty tasty. So he eats up a bunch of them, and he gets a little closer to the bank, and he starts to see some black spots, and he gets kind of a taste of iron in the water. He's going, well, that's weird, I never saw black spots over the yellow, but man, these shrimp are really good, and I do taste a little iron. Well, just about this time, a barracuda or something comes out from under the bank and tries to eat him. Well, he misses, but he takes a big chunk out of his back, and he bleeds and everything, and he manages to get away. Well, the minute that he's hit, this reactive mind, the stimulus response mind, just keyed right in and it moved him out of the danger area. Even though he had a boo hole in his back, he had pain and unconsciousness. Now, in the future, what's going to happen is that there's going to be a computation there. That we have yellow is equal to the taste of shrimp, is equal to black spots on the sand, is equal to the taste of iron in the water, is equal to the bite of the fish on the back. Now, this doesn't sound like much, but it is equal to. I mean, when that fish sees yellow, it's the same as being bit in the back. Now, just say this fish has got himself his Ingram now. Now, in the future, when he's coming along and he gets over yellow sand, he don't feel swift anymore. And he sort of lost his taste for shrimp, because every time he eats a shrimp, he kind of gets this nagging pain in his back. And anytime he gets across yellow sand and he starts seeing some black spots in it, he's really nervous. And then, boy, the minute he tastes iron, he's out of there. He's gone. Boom. So yellow sand plus black spots and taste of iron equals run equals survive. Now, as you can see, this is a very literal mind. It's composed of pictures. It directly influences the body, just like when you reach out and you touch a hot stove, your hand jerks back before you even think about it. It's not exactly the same kind of mind. That's when the somatic mind just goes from the fingertips to the spinal cord and jerks the arm. But the reactive mind is exactly the same. Whenever you, one of these things re-stimulates or gets is reminded, or you get reminded of in this reactive mind, you have a response. You see yellow sand equals run away. And in the case of a person, they see baseball bat equals headache. I'll go over that a little bit later, how these things tie in. But you can see this reactive mind, when the evolution was first occurring, was a pretty good thing. You know, whenever the little fish got up on land a little bit too far, breathed a little too much air, he kicked the bucket and died. So then this reactive mind later is saying, oh boy, you know, when you get up there on top of the bank, that's not good. You've got to get back down in the water. And then actually the whole evolutionary line was using this information to produce new body forms. And one fish decides he's going to keep sticking his nose out of the water. Pretty soon he starts to breathe air, and then he grows legs or whatever. Darwin did a good works on that. You can look in any library and find a bit of the history of man and things like that. By the way, you should read History of Man, written by L.R.H. It's basically, it was originally called Watt's Audit. It gave the principal incidents on the time track that a person needed to address in order to resolve some of the problems of life. Now, the reason this reactive mind was any good at all, you could look at the analytical mind. Now, this is your thinking, computing, aware mind. This is the mind that you're aware of using. This is one that you know about. This is all your memories that you can find. This is everything that you know is in this analytical mind. Now, in here we know that the fish is not the sand, the sand's not the water, and the water's not the bite. The taste of iron doesn't mean you're going to get eaten. This is all in a reactive mind. It is A equals Y equals B equals Z equals A. One thing equals everything else. Everything in it is equal to the same thing. The analytical mind, however, is able to distinguish differences, similarities, and identity. Now, differences, you know, they're not identical. There's something different about them. And identity means they're exactly the same thing, and something that's similar is almost exactly the same thing to a greater or larger degree. And if they're totally different, if you're comparing a tree and a rock, they're way different. Whereas if you're comparing a tree and a small bush, they're only similar. Well, in the reactive mind, the tree and the small bush and the rock are all the same. And in the analytical mind, they're all different. So this is the difference between the reactive mind and the analytical mind. As a general rule, the analytical mind is composed of a fairly accurate set of pictures of the time track as a person lives through life. And it's pretty much all ordered. But the reactive mind is unknowing, and it's messed up on its dates, it's messed up on its time. Something happened in 1800, it's exactly the same that happened in 40 BC, which is exactly the same that happened yesterday. In other words, there's no time in this reactive mind. It can be anywhere. The pain of the fish that got hit in the back and a year ago is the same as the pain that's turning on right now whenever he swims over yellow sand and black spot and tastes iron. Now, I may be hitting some of this stuff a little fast. And this is a lecture for new people, so I'm trying to cover quite a bit of data here. I'm not going to go into it so deeply as to communicate a full and complete understanding, but I do want everybody to understand these basic things and what the time track is and what Ingram's blocks and secondaries are, the reactive mind, the analytical mind. Now, we have another little thing that comes up here, and that's the spirit, the person himself. In Scientology, we call it a Satan. It's a Greek letter, theta, which means life. We just stick an N on the end of it, make it a Satan, and now we're talking about the person himself. And we use this to distinguish it from spirit because people have been educated down the path track that all spirits were bad, they were ghosts, they went boom in the night, and you know, you're supposed to be afraid of spirits, and spirits were mean and evil, and roddy, 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 rah. Well, none of that's true. Actually, you are a spirit. You know, you're not a, you don't have a spirit. When you die, you don't have something that separates off from you and goes off to heaven or hell or purgatory or whatever, or karma, or the endless wheel of birth and life, or birth and death. You are that spirit. You are a spirit. You don't go anywhere. You don't have something that takes off and goes somewhere. If anybody goes anywhere, you do. So we call this a Satan, just to sort of distinguish it from the other common definition of spirit. But in fact, you are a spirit. Now, the spirit has some very, very particular qualities. They're able to postulate, which means to decide or set a course for the future or say something is there, to perceive, to put out little particles, and then feel those particles bounce back and actually tell whether there's something there or not. Even with the eyes, you're feeling bouncing light rays. Just perception, you have 52 perceptions. Basically, it's just the Satan or this being, the spirit, perceiving in life. So he has the ability to postulate or decide. He has the ability to perceive. Now he has a couple other abilities here which are sort of inherent in it, and we're going to have to go into the definitions of the physical universe a little bit. We call this by the first letters of matter, energy, space, and time. This is the physical universe. We call it MESP, MESP, matter, energy, space, and time. Now, space is only a viewpoint of dimension. This is a Scientology definition, but you can readily see that if you're looking at a car over there and you say, wow, man, that car is 10 miles away, man, that's an awful big car. If you're saying, oh, man, that's only 100 feet away, the car is a normal size. So a lot of times we'll see something far away, and we think it's very small, and when we get up close to it, it's very big. So it's only upon our viewpoint at the time how far away something is. It's either small or it's big or it's near or it's far. And this is all in relation to something else. So space basically is just a viewpoint of dimension. Okay? It's over there somewhere and it's about that far. It's a dimension. Now time, we haven't really went over that, but time basically is a consecutive record of nows. We're always in now. You can say, well, I remember some nows yesterday, and there'll be some nows 10 minutes from now, but it's always now. If you look at what time it is, it's always now. So basically the time track, or time itself, is just a record of these consecutive creations that we perceive in. Now the second ability that this Satan has, once he's created some space, is to locate energy in that space. He face and say, okay, well, it's about 100 miles or nothing out there, and now I'm going to put a ball of energy in it. And he can move that energy around. If he's put a three-dimensional space, if he just made a one-dimensional space, he can just move it back and forth. If he's made a three-dimensional space, he can move it around in three different directions or a million different directions. But basically, if he's created space, he says, there's some space there, here's the corners of it, and I'm going to put some energy in there. know, he can put this energy in there and he can take it away. Basically, that's all these pictures of the time stamp are energy facsimiles, like a Xerox is a facsimile of something that was copied. They're just copies. These are energy copies of the physical universe. And, of course, they're an exact copy, so if they have force or anything in them, they can affect the being. But basically, the Thetan creates space and locates energy and objects in them. Now, an object is just condensed energy. If you go talk to some of the nuclear physicists, they say, well, yeah, well, there is particles, but see, we don't really think they're particles, they're just condensed energy. And that's true. So there's really no such thing as matter, it's all just condensed energy, so you can boil the ability of the Thetan down, it's the creating space, and then locating energy and the disposition of that energy, whether it's electricity or wood or a piece of concrete or whatever, and moving it around in that space. So those are the abilities of a Thetan. He has the ability to postulate, to decide things, he has the ability to perceive, to communicate, and he can create space and locate objects in space. Now, one of the ways he does this is a very interesting little triangle called ARC. This means affinity, reality, communication, and understanding. Now, affinity is a consideration of distance. This is just how close you like something. If you like somebody a whole lot, well, you think about them, and more than likely, you'll think they're right there by you. And if you think of somebody that you don't like, well, you know, they're clean over in another state or another country, or they're just as far away from you as you can get them. So affinity basically means the liking of someone or something, how close you're willing to have it to you. Of course, ultimate affinity would be willing to occupy the same space as. So most people think, you know, they have a lot of a high affinity for their body because they're being in the body. They're actually in the body. If they didn't like the body so much, they wouldn't be in it. Now the next thing is reality, and reality is basically agreement. If two guys are looking at something and say, yep, that's a wall, another guy comes along and goes, no, it's not, it's a pine tree. Well, we don't have any reality there. And the first two guys probably gang up on the third guy and throw him out, so everybody's agreeing this wall, not a pine tree. Society kind of punishes you for not agreeing with them. In other words, they're saying that this reality is not true. Well, that's all reality is agreement. That's all it is just purely agreement. So any reality that anybody has is only agreement. One of the reasons a person gets sad, we call an ARC break. You know, they were in good ARC, or liking or love, high communication, high reality, good communication, and they understand. And when this is suddenly broken, like somebody dying or your best friend stabbing you in the back or something like this, you go into grief, you actually might even get a secondary over it. But basically, this is called an ARC break, and an ARC break will always produce sadness. If you see anybody sad, you know they have an ARC break. And what is ARC? ARC, the ARC triangle, states that if you raise any one corner of this triangle, if you raise affinity, then also reality and communication will go up and so will understanding. But basically, what really is ARC is the sea. It's the being. It is life. The Thetan himself can decide that he had like something close to him. He has the ability to consider space. And he can agree with things. That's reality. And he can understand. Basically, that's what he is understanding. So ARC is actually the Thetan himself. That's how he handles the whole physical universe. It's basically a clean statement of what the Thetan is. So anytime that he has an ARC break, something comes along that breaks his affinity or his liking or his agreement or his communication or his understanding, he goes down tone, or he becomes less cheerful, and he goes towards sadness about the thing, and he will tell you about how he doesn't understand it. Well, you have made him less there. When he's in very high ARC, when he likes something, he agrees with it, he's communicating with it, and he understands it very well, he's actually sort of being that thing. In fact, the ultimate affinity would be just to be that thing itself. So when he has lower affinity, he gets more and more distance from it, he has less and less communication with it, he understands it less and less, and in fact, he's less and less there. So anyway, we'll go back to a little bit of a discussion about the Ingrams and locks and secondaries, which is started out along the time track. Now the Thetan is basically ARC. ARC is equal to life, is equal to understanding. The Thetan is not a thing, it's not something solid. He has no location in matter, he has no location in energy, space, or time. In fact, the Thetan or the spirit can move back and forth in time.